Welcome to Ring of Fire. I'm Farron Cousins. We've got a lot to discuss today, especially because this is a Q&A episode. I will be answering as many questions as possible that came in through our YouTube channel, youtube.com/TheRingOfFire. I put up a request on our community tab for questions, and I'm going to be going through all of those, or at least as many as possible, on this episode. But of course, we also have the big news of the week that we have to get to, including Donald Trump stashing away his presidential records at Mar-a-Lago, which is a very clear violation of the Presidential Records Act. And if you want to get the full show every single week, plus access to all of our Ring of Fire archives, go sign up to become a member at rofpodcast.com. And of course, don't miss out on any of the requests for questions for our Q&A episodes. So go ahead and subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/TheRingOfFire. So let's kick it off with the news of the week. And obviously, as I mentioned in the intro, we have to talk about the 15, at least, boxes of documents that were recently found at Mar-a-Lago that contained presidential records from Donald Trump's time as the President of the United States. What we know so far is that it included his so-called love letters to Kim Jong-un. It also included the Hurricane Dorian map, which is the infamous Sharpie Gate, where Donald Trump had to draw in and show that, oh no, see, look, the cone of uncertainty goes all up into these areas. It was very embarrassing material. But as the week went on, we also learned a little more. And it appears that it is incredibly likely, although not yet 100% confirmed, that there was material in there regarding national security for the United States. You know, classified intelligence documents that Donald Trump stashed away at Mar-a-Lago. And as I mentioned, this is a very clear violation of the Presidential Records Act. And that act was actually put in place after the Nixon administration for very obvious reasons. You can't destroy presidential records. It all has to go to National Archives. If the President of the United States scribbles something down on a blank piece of paper, that piece of paper becomes a protected document under the Presidential Records Act. Absolutely everything has to be saved and turned over. You cannot keep it. You cannot rip it up, as we know Donald Trump also did with some documents, to the point where his staffers had to tape them back together. So, what happens when somebody violates the Presidential Records Act? Well, violations can carry a penalty of up to 3 years in prison, and also could possibly bar the individual from running for office in the future. So you want to talk about keeping Trump out of office, prosecute him on this. This is a federal law. It's spelled out very clearly. Okay, there's very clear consequences also spelled out in that law, as I just mentioned. Jail time, banishment from public office for the rest of your life. Those are real consequences for doing the things that we now know Donald Trump did. Carolyn Maloney, Democratic chair of the House Oversight Committee, announced this week that her committee is going to be investigating this. They're definitely looking into it, which is great, right? But a House committee, much like the Select Committee, can't prosecute anybody. All they can do is recommend that somebody get prosecuted. So while I'm glad somebody's doing something about this, I wish it was somebody that actually had the ability to prosecute. Namely, the United States Department of Justice. This would fall under their jurisdiction. It's absolutely something they should be looking into. But as of me sitting here and recording this podcast, because by the time you listen to it, maybe something has changed, but as of this second, the DOJ has said nothing about this. There have been no press conferences. There's been no statements from the United States Department of Justice saying, hey, we take this seriously, we're going to look into it. Nothing. There is no indication that they're going to be launching an investigation for a very clear violation of a federal law. You know, that's like if you walk into somebody's house and you find, you know, bales and bales of cocaine. And then the law enforcement says, whatever. We got the cocaine, so that's the important part, right? No. No, you kind of need to have the investigation to find out what the hell was going on there, why this happened, and who the responsible parties were. And it's no different when you walk into Mar-a-Lago and see 15 boxes of documents that he is not legally allowed to possess. Those documents were the property of the United States government, the National Archives specifically. And of course, we got them. We got the documents, or at least as many as we know about. There's also reports that they're still looking because they think there's more. Maybe that's what the DOJ is waiting for, but I don't even want to give them the benefit of the doubt right now. I don't think we have to do that. The DOJ has not earned the benefit of the doubt, right? They don't get to be the, well, let's wait and see government agency. Do you want to know if there's more documents down there, DOJ? Cool. Get a subpoena and go down there yourself. Raid the place. You have cause at this point. He was holding illegal property there. That's cause. You could go to a judge and say, we need a search warrant, you know, a top to bottom, full sweep warrant to go in there and see if there are any more documents. I mean, could you imagine how that would look? Swarms of federal agents rushing into Mar-a-Lago, turning over the furniture, you know, ripping up the couch cushions, make sure there's not documents in there. Going through the entire property, do you know what that would do to Donald Trump? Well, first and foremost, we know it would set him off tremendously, which I would love to see. But the optics of it would absolutely damage him for any future political run. It would damage him for any person that wants to hitch their wagon to him in this year's midterms. And yes, I am talking about the political benefits of doing this too. Because after all, isn't everything political, right? I know that's not good enough reason to go out and do this, but it's, I guess you would call it, a bit of a fringe benefit, right? There are perfectly valid legal reasons for this to happen, and I cannot tell you how extremely disappointed I am in the United States Department of Justice, in Merrick Garland, who I fully believe needs to resign. I believe that Biden should replace him. This man is not up to the job. And let's be honest here, this is a big job. With everything that we need the U.S. Department of Justice to do right now, which includes basically taking over for the January 6th committee, appointing special prosecutors to take over those roles. Because last week, I don't know if you caught this, but last week you had committee members that came out talking to the press and they said, I don't know how we're going to do this. I don't know how we're going to distill all of this down in a way that actually makes sense to the public. Don't know how we're going to get it done in time. We've got so many documents to go through. We just don't have the time. Now, I'm paraphrasing there, of course, but they're coming out and admitting that they probably can't do this the justice that it deserves, which is something I have been saying now for months, which is why the DOJ needs to take it over. The committee has done good work so far. I give them full accolades for that. I'm not trying to, you know, downplay anything that they have done. But it's time for the DOJ to take over. The stakes are too big, not to mention Republicans still poised to do pretty dang well in the midterms this year. And we don't want them getting control of that committee. Because originally, my fear was that they were going to disband the committee and that the investigations would be over. Well, several individuals, specifically Matt Gaetz and Madison Cawthorn, actually came out this week and they said, oh no, we're not going to disband it. We're going to take it over and we're going to weaponize it to use it against Democrats. We're going to investigate them for anything and everything we see fit. You know, Nancy Pelosi, why didn't you have the Capitol Police come to the Capitol sooner? Even though that's not something she could do. You know, where's Hunter Biden? We're going to investigate that. The Afghanistan withdrawal, we're going to investigate that. That's what they said this week. So let the DOJ take over the investigations. have the committee work with them for a month or two, just to make sure there's a smooth transition, maybe even longer if they need to. But by the time the midterms roll around, that select committee in the House needs to be completely disbanded so that Republicans cannot take it over and just use it to harass Democrats and waste everybody's time. The DOJ can handle the investigation. They've got the manpower. They've got the resources. They've got everything they need to take this thing over. But most importantly, we have evidence of criminal activity. Those boxes of documents are the evidence. And they were sitting there in Donald Trump's house. I mean, you can't get a bigger smoking gun than that. So I don't know what the DOJ is waiting for. But I know the public is growing impatient. I get lots of comments. In fact, I've seen plenty in the questions we're going to get to in just a moment here, asking what the hell's going on. And the answer is, I don't know. I don't know why they're dragging their feet. I don't know why they're not doing this. Maybe they want to avoid any kind of, you know, oh, we don't want to be a political group. We don't want people to think that we're being partisan. I don't care. It doesn't matter what you look like doing this. Laws were broken, and it's your job as the Department of Justice to find out why the hell that happened. Okay. Coming up here. This is the question section. So 3, 2, 1. And now let's get to the Q&A part of today's show. As I mentioned earlier, I put the request out for questions on the community page on the YouTube or the Ring of Fire YouTube channel, youtube.com/TheRingOfFire. So if you want to get in on this action, go subscribe to our YouTube channel. The community tab is right up there at the top. And you'll see when I post these. And again, I hope to do these at least once a month because I love that we get to cover so many topics and it's really interactive too. So I do love it. So our first question today comes from Dylan Reese, who says, do you consider yourself the progressive Red Foreman? Because I do. Love your channel and your commentary. You, Pac-Man, and Tyler Cohen are the only people I can listen to. Well, thank you, Dylan, for the kind words and, you know, the Red Foreman reference. Because, yeah, I get angry. I get angry in the videos. I get angry, you know, doing the podcast, talking about these issues, talking about the lack of progress. And I think that's what you have to do to a degree. You know, you can't just go out there and just shout and shout and shout every single day. But people want to see some passion. People want to see that you care. And a lot of times I don't obviously set out to be angry in videos or on this podcast. If you watched it or if you listened to it, you'll hear it grow as I'm going along. And that's because it's genuine. Because the more I sit there and think about these things, the angrier I get. And that's why it comes across that way. Hendrik Saldua says, why isn't the DOJ moving against Trump? Lots of evidence during the insurrection pointing to the con man. Again, I wish I knew. I wish I knew what was holding them up. And obviously, yes, everybody else wants to know this as well because it makes no sense. That's the biggest problem. This makes no sense. He tore up the documents. His staff put them back together. Well, even though they were able to save them, the destruction of those documents alone is a violation of the Presidential Records Act. Hiding them in Mar-a-Lago is a second violation of the Presidential Records Act. And it's a very, you know, tiny kind of law, I guess, a kind of petty thing to take Donald Trump down. But you know what? If it works, do it. It does carry criminal penalties and it could bar him from ever holding office again. And I think, in my opinion, that solves a lot of problems for this country. Jennifer H.M. says, how can we get legislators to break apart bills and force votes on every single issue? If we break apart Build Back Better and the Voting Rights Act and force a vote on each part, the public will see where everyone stands on every issue. Bring that to the voting box in 22. Bring it to the voters. If a candidate doesn't support making the rich pay their fair share of taxes or a ban on gerrymandering or increased benefits for the elderly, run that ad against everyone, Republican or Democrat, defending a seat. Put their records on display, but it has to be piece by piece. It's too easy to say I object to all of this because I'm worried about cost. I agree. I think they should start breaking these things apart. And I think, unfortunately, that's why a lot of pieces of legislation fails. Because we try to put everything in there, try to kind of shoehorn it all into one specific thing. And then, of course, everybody makes their amendments. They attach all these other pieces to it. And things die. And we lose out on some really good pieces. And I do think what Jennifer here is suggesting is a wonderful strategy. You know, break it apart. Let's watch what happens when everybody votes against lowering the eligibility age for Medicare or not letting the government negotiate prescription drug prices. I think that is a good strategy. My problem with it, and this was actually the same problem I had with the Force the Vote crowd, not that I didn't like the strategy, it's that it relies too much on the public giving a damn. Because that's always the second part of the equation. It's like, yeah, great, let's put their records out there, which I agree with you on, don't get me wrong. I agree with putting it out there and letting people see where these people, the representatives and senators, stand on these issues, and they can see their vote. I agree with that. But I don't know that it actually will move the public, because the public as a whole, I'm sorry to say it, we're stupid. We are dumb as hell when you put us together. If you're depending on us to do something, to hold somebody accountable, to actually make change in this country, then you're wasting your time. And I think the pandemic was really solid proof of all of that. Right? We can't even trust people to toss on a mask real quick when they run into the grocery store so that everybody doesn't get COVID. So why would I trust this same public to actually take the time to look at these records, to pay attention to the political ads when they come on TV instead of walking out of the room to go grab a snack or changing the channel, whatever it is? You can't guarantee anything with that. So I do agree with the strategy. I just don't think it's going to have the outcome that we would like to see it have. A question here from Anna Prio, or Pro, sorry. When will Matt Gaetz be prosecuted? Interesting developments, of course, this week on the Matt Gaetz front. On Wednesday, you had Big Joe Ellicott here in the state of Florida officially plead guilty. He signed his plea deal, so he has officially now agreed to cooperate in the investigations of other people, it says. And the reason this is significant, of course, is because Ellicott says that he was in the room when Joel Greenberg made the phone call to Matt Gaetz saying, "Hey, bud, we accidentally had sex with a 17-year-old. Okay. If Ellicott has more evidence than just saying, "Hey, I heard him on the phone," the saying "you heard it on the phone" isn't going to move the needle with a jury or with prosecutors or with investigators. So, yeah, that's going to be a pretty big thing to overcome. But he was neck deep with Joel Greenberg, so it's likely Ellicott may have even more information, you know, to come forward with. So that's a big development on that. As to the question, when will he be prosecuted? Not soon enough. But I do think if you're actually looking for like a real timetable, because I would love to see it happen today. Let's talk about timetables. Okay. The ex-girlfriend just agreed a couple weeks ago to cooperate. Ellicott just agreed days ago to cooperate. Joel Greenberg's cooperation, on the other hand, is about to come to an end because he's about to go to jail. They have extended him twice, but in March, I think early to mid-March, that was the latest extension. So at that time, he goes to jail and his cooperation, you know, falls off. But that's why it's important that these other two individuals have come along to cooperate, because they can corroborate and perhaps build upon any evidence against Matt Gaetz that Greenberg gave them. So when will he be prosecuted? Which I'm assuming probably more like, when will he be indicted? If he gets indicted, I'm guessing within 3 months. So we're into the second week of February now. So I would say mid-May. That's going to be my guesstimate on when he might be indicted, when he could possibly be arrested. Mid-May, again, totally guessing on that, just based on the way things have gone so far. I hope I'm right, because that would be kind of fun. But I do, just in general, I don't care when it is, I hope that if the evidence is there, that they do go after him and they don't just try to sweep it under the rug. If there's no evidence, you know, if this is all big smoke show, then no, he shouldn't be prosecuted. We have to get rid of him by actually voting him out of office, which would be tougher, but we'll do what we can. I don't want innocent people prosecuted. Personally, I don't think he's innocent, so I'd love to see him go down for this. Joe TTE says, the 14th Amendment, Section 3, how can so many enablers, participants still be in office? It blows my mind. It blows my mind, too. I mean, the 14th Amendment is exceptionally clear. You know, I don't have the text in front of me, so just kind of to paraphrase, like, no person who has engaged in or offered support for an insurrection against the United States, shall hold office therein. Because, you know, they spoke a lot differently back then, so it sounds weird to our ears. But, you know, it made sense to them at the time. So anyway, yeah, you either engaged in the insurrection or you supported it. You can't hold office ever again. So the reason they're still in office is because of definitions, right? And we saw a lot of that play out this week. And it all started with Mitch McConnell coming out and describing the events of January 6th as a, quote, violent insurrection. And his use of that term set off a lot of other Republicans. Marco Rubio came out and he made clear, he said, no, it wasn't an insurrection, it was a riot. It was a riot, so you can't say that. And a couple other Republican politicians also said, no, totally not an insurrection, just a riot, just a mob, you know, whatever it is they can to downplay it, because the words they use matter. Because if everybody goes out there and calls it an insurrection, including the Republicans, it makes it easier for a court to determine that, okay, it was in fact an insurrection. Kind of like how people say Band-Aid when they're talking about an adhesive strip to cover a wound. Band-Aid is a brand name, but it has become so part of the vernacular to mean adhesive strips to cover up a wound that Band-Aid no longer can hold the trademark on that. You know, everybody can use it because that's essentially what everybody calls them now. And it's the same thing with an insurrection, and I hope everybody understands that, you know, analogy there. Because if everybody goes out there and calls it an insurrection, and it becomes accepted that that is the proper term, the courts can, because they've done it in the past with, with things like Band-Aid, they can use that to say, okay, well, we're all calling it this, everybody accepts it, so that is officially what the definition is. Because if it's not an insurrection, the 14th Amendment doesn't apply. So that's why the words that we use to describe it do matter. That's why Mitch McConnell calling it a violent insurrection this week, it matters. And that's why it freaked the hell out of so many of these Republicans. That's why they're doing damage control. Like, no, it was a riot, not an insurrection. Riot. Everybody say riot. Damage may be done. Mitch McConnell holds a little more weight than people like Marco Rubio or Josh Hawley. So, keep using the word. That's what I encourage people to do. Make it the accepted term for that day, because that just might affect what happens in those court cases. So let's move on to the next one. From Dan Corkill, who says, do you have a real job? Yes, I do. I have several. I'm a producer for Mike Papantonio. I am the executive editor of the Trial Lawyer magazine. I'm the host of the Ring of Fire podcast. I am the host of Ring of Fire on YouTube, and I'm also the host of Fair and Balanced on YouTube. So I have lots of real jobs. But I'm assuming what you're trying to say is that the YouTube, the podcast, those aren't real jobs. Sure, whatever, if you want to classify it as such. But yes, I have a regular job that I go to in an office every single day, Monday through Friday. I clock in, right? I get coffee, I chit-chat with people, I do my job, I work on the magazine, I work for PAP. do all kinds of things. Because Ring of Fire really is secondary to all of our other jobs, especially the YouTube channel. You know, that's just something we started doing. You know, same thing with the podcast. When the radio program ended years ago, we could have just ended it there. But, you know, Scott and Sam said, no, we're going to keep doing it as a podcast, and we're going to keep putting it out every week. And then, you know, I took over for Sam, and Scott and I still do this. You know, we this is a separate project. It's technically a separate business, to be honest with you. So, it is what it is. Yes, I have a real job. I have far too many of them, if you ask me. So I appreciate your comment, and if you're trolling me, then whatever. Here's a question. This is interesting. From Douglas Ducat. Says, since you're not highlighting the economy, nor giving Biden and the Democrats any credit for this good economy, can we expect more pro-Republican talking points from you? First and foremost, somebody replied to it, said, I think you're on the wrong channel. That's funny. Yeah, I've never had any pro-Republican talking points come out of my mouth. So I'm not sure what that means. But if you want to go after me for not talking about this great economy that we're living in, then I'm going to tell you that this is not a great economy that we're living in. The minimum wage hasn't changed in over a decade. Unions are being destroyed before they're even able to be formed. Millions of people living in poverty, millions of people working multiple jobs, healthcare costs going through the roof, 882 prescription drugs had their prices raised in January of this year alone. And you're going to tell me this is a good economy? No, the stock market is doing better. Oh, sure, unemployment is going down. Wonderful. What kind of jobs are we creating? Are we creating good-paying jobs that support a strong working class, strong middle class here in the United States? No, we're not. So don't come at me with that bull crap of the economy's strong and you're not giving Biden any credit for it. Go whine somewhere else. Because I'm not going to sit here and tout an economy that's only working for rich people. That is lazy, that is stupid, and I'm not going to engage in that kind of praise of the Democrats. You know why? Because I'm not a cheerleader. I'm not a cheerleader for any party. When the Democrats screw up, I'm going to call them out on it. When they're not doing good enough, I'm going to tell them what they need to be doing. I am a registered Democrat, have been since the day I turned 18 years old, and I have no plans of leaving the Democratic Party. But I am not happy with them at all. I do not like what they're doing, and I'm not going to give them credit for something that is not working for millions of Americans. And I think it's ridiculous that anybody would sit there and say that this economy is strong when you can look across this country and see all the suffering, see all the people struggling to make ends meet, see all the people who have to still make the choice between a prescription drug and food for their family, and you're going to tell me this economy is strong? Get the hell out of here with that crap, because I don't want to hear it. Here's a question from Hashtagger. Says, how is it possible for so many Republican politicians in the U.S. to get away with shredding the Constitution? Are politicians above the law in America? I don't want to say yes, but I kind of feel like I have to say yes to that. They are above the law because they're typically the ones who get to enforce these kinds of things. You know, the stock trading violations, I think, is a huge one. Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of violations from members of Congress and their staffers in 2021. Nobody got in trouble. Nobody. Most of them didn't even have to pay the $200 fine that comes along with those violations. So yeah, they feel like they're above the law. As for shredding the Constitution, sure, they do that all the time. But I think the worst part of what they do with the Constitution is distort it. You know, saying things like, hey, Twitter can't suspend me because First Amendment. That's not how that works. But we've heard that argument far too many times in the last 12 months, right? Oh, it's censorship. This is a violation of my constitutional rights. Nope, it's not. It's a private company doing a private thing that Republicans actually fought for at the U.S. Supreme Court. So shut up. You did this to yourself. That, to me, is the most disturbing thing they do to the Constitution. Of course, that's just one example. What they've done to the Second Amendment, saying that basically it means anybody, everyone, everywhere, every time gets to have a gun and you can shoot whoever the hell you want. That's not what that means. But conservative activists at the Supreme Court over the years have basically turned it to mean that. Oh, the Constitution says that money from a corporation is in fact political speech, the Supreme Court tells us. Nope, that's wrong. Here's a question from somebody whose username is Yeah, Okay. It says, you seem intelligent, and I think you said you're decently educated. So after all the reporting you did and do about from top to bottom and inside out corruption within our government, how can you possibly see it as being worthy of continuing? I don't know if you're talking about being worthy of continuing with what I do here or worthy of continuing the country because of all the corruption. So I'll address both. It's worth doing because I think it's important. I think it's important to talk about the corruption. It does get draining. It is exceptionally tiresome some days. In fact, I'll be honest. The other day, in the middle of doing videos, after I finished one, before I started the next one, I stopped, I looked at the producer, and I said, is this just what we just have to do this forever now? Like, there's no end point. And it just kind of was a weird realization for me to think that, like, yeah, this is just what I do now. I have to wake up every single morning. I start recording each day, usually about 7 a.m., and immediately have to get angry at all the corruption in the world. Like, that's how I basically wake up and start my day, having to yell and get angry. But I got to be honest, like, look, outside of doing all of these, and I know we just heard a big outburst from me from that idiot question there. Not this one, but the one a couple questions ago. So I'm genuinely like a happy guy. I like my life. I really do. Sometimes the news is draining. Sometimes the stories are so horrible that it makes you feel like you don't want to do this, but you get through it. And if you can find joy in other parts of your life, you know, that brings you the happiness, that gives you the peace and the comfort that you need, then it's worth it. It's good. It's okay. That's what keeps me going, you know, and I love my coworkers. We actually have a ton of fun at the office. So, you know, that's always good. But yeah, the act of physically doing this sometimes does get draining, but it's worth doing, so we continue doing it. And as for, you know, how can you possibly see it as being worthy of continuing if you're talking about the government? Well, because we need it. Again, I'm not sure which one of these you were asking about in the question. We need the government, obviously, because we need the United States. We have to fix the government. I think it needs a massive overhaul. Honestly, a brand new constitution. You know, there's nothing wrong with effectively, like, rebooting the country, I think. And I feel like we would benefit from that. Because the path we're going on, I think, is a path that we can't necessarily pull ourselves back from. Things have gotten too extreme. And of course, rebooting the country with new laws, new rules, everything would be extreme as well. And that'll never happen. It'll never happen. But it should. That's actually what Thomas Jefferson had wanted. Yeah, he was like, oh, but the founders wanted this. Okay, cool. Let's talk about what the founders wanted. Because several of them, following with Thomas Jefferson, didn't want to bog down future generations with their laws because they knew the world was going to keep changing. Maybe it's worth looking into for the United States. I don't know. Listen, got even more questions coming up for the members-only show. And if you're not a member, unfortunately, this is where we leave you. But you can become a member. Go to rofpodcast.com to sign up. Not only do you get the full show every single week, but you also get exclusive access to the entirety of the Ring of Fire archives. So thank you very much for listening.